WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Cities are beginning to experiment with a new approach to curbing violence, suing the gun industry. Chicago and New Orleans filed suits last fall. Mayors from around the country will discuss filing similar suits when they meet later this month at the annual Conference of Mayors. The gun lawsuits are inspired by successful suits against tobacco companies and incorporate some of the same legal arguments. Right now, the tobacco industry is bracing for a new Justice Department suit that the president announced last night. We'll hear a couple of perspectives on the gun suits. First, we have an overview from Fox Butterfield, national correspondent for the New York Times, who covers crime and criminal justice. Let's start with a lawsuit underway in Brooklyn. Family members of six people who were killed in separate shooting incidents are holding the gun industry collectively liable for the deaths.
This is the first of a new generation of lawsuits that are going to be filed against the gun industry this year. This one involves individuals. The others are going to involve cities. In this one, the theory is to hold the gun industry collectively responsible, as opposed to past suits, which have really just looked at individual gun companies. But the theory here is to hold them collectively responsible for negligently distributing guns in such a way that people were able to go to states with lax gun control laws, particularly those in the Southeast, Georgia, South Carolina, Virginia, Florida, and purchase guns and bring them to New York, which has strict gun control laws, and then use those guns to commit crimes in New York.
How are the people who are suing saying that the gun industry is to blame for the fact that people bought guns in the South where the laws are more lenient and took them to the North where the laws are stricter?
They've done a lot of statistical analysis based on data that's been collected in the past few years by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, which shows that a large number of guns are sold in these states with lax gun control laws, much larger number of guns than people there would buy, more sort of per population, if you will. And so it's based on this statistical analysis.
Now, the city of Chicago and the city of New Orleans have already filed suits against the gun industry. Let's look at the city of Chicago lawsuit. It filed a $433 million suit naming 22 manufacturers, 22 stores, and four distributors of guns. What is the suit charging in Chicago?
The suit in Chicago, in many ways, is very similar to the private suit being brought in New York. It's also charging that the gun manufacturers and distributors and dealers basically flooded the market, knowingly flooded the market. Chicago has extremely strict gun control laws. It's essentially illegal to own a handgun in the city of Chicago, and you can't purchase a handgun in the city of Chicago. But you can in the suburbs. And so there are a ring of dealers in the suburbs that sell guns rather easily to people who come out from the city. And what Chicago did before it filed its suit was it ran a sting operation. It had police officers go out and dress up as members of street gangs or militias or biker groups and go into these suburban gun dealers and say, hey, you know, I need a piece because some cop is giving me a hard time, or I need a gun because somebody's trying to rip off my drug territory. And they would say, you know, I don't have a state firearms permit. Is it okay if I buy a gun? And they found that the gun dealers were perfectly happy to sell them guns in these situations, and in some cases even tell them what brand of gun would be better to buy to shoot a cop. So Chicago is using that information and saying that the dealers were knowingly selling to people they shouldn't have, and that the manufacturers were selling far too many guns to these stores compared to the number of people who would have lived in the suburbs.
Meaning that the manufacturers kind of knew that something fishy was going on here?
That the manufacturers were, in essence, turning a blind eye or winking at what was going on.
Now, New Orleans has also filed a suit against parts of the gun industry. How does the New Orleans suit compare to the Chicago suit?
The New Orleans suit is based on a very different legal theory or claim. It's based on a more traditional sort of product liability claim, although what they're saying is that the gun manufacturers failed to incorporate sufficient safety devices, particularly some new ones that would allow people to personalize guns so that they would be high-tech safety devices that would make it impossible for someone other than the actual owner to fire the gun.
So New Orleans is saying that the gun industry could have added these safety precautions, but they intentionally haven't. What would the rationale be for not adding it, according to the lawsuit?
Well, the rationale from the gun industry, I mean, the gun industry argues several things. One is that these devices are not yet perfected. And secondly, that if you did add them, that they might make it difficult for the owner in, you know, when he needed the gun to fire it. I mean, presumably people have these guns for self-defense, and if there was a failure in this safety device, then the owner might not be able to use it when his house was broken into, say.
Is the New Orleans lawsuit accusing the gun industry of intentionally not adding these safety guards because it enables the gun industry to sell to more people?
Yes, and they're arguing that the gun industry for years has resisted efforts to incorporate more safety devices, that essentially there's been very little change in the design of guns in a century, and considering what we've invented in the past century, that we certainly could have made guns safer.
There's a whistleblower from the gun industry who's come forward, Robert Haas, who was a former senior vice president of Smith & Wesson. He left the firm in 1989. What has his role been in these lawsuits against the gun industry?
Well, his role specifically in the suit that's now in Brooklyn, it's called Hamilton v. Accutech, and he has provided information somewhat similar to that of some of the whistleblowers in the tobacco suits, showing that the gun companies were aware of what they were doing and the way they were selling their guns, that they did not make a great deal of effort to find out how the guns were being distributed and who was buying them, that they were careless.
Now, there's a lot of other cities that are considering suing parts of the gun industry, and there's a national conference of mayors for the end of this month. What are some of the things that might be discussed there?
The big issue at the annual meeting of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which is going to be held in Washington the end of January, is going to be how to sue the gun industry. There will probably be 15 or so cities that will be suing the gun industry by spring or summer. There might be as many as 50 to 100 cities by the end of the year. That's the talk. What will actually happen remains to be seen.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Fox Butterfield, national correspondent for the New York Times, writing about crime and criminal justice. He's also the author of the book All God's Children. How would you say that these gun suits compare to the suits against the tobacco industry?
Certainly the success of the tobacco litigation has spurred the cities to try this. Really, in the past, virtually all suits against the gun industry have failed because the gun industry has argued that while the product they're making is dangerous and does wound or kill people, that, in fact, that's what it's designed for. So there's really no mistake in the way it's manufactured. And they've been able to convince juries that that's so up until now. So, but the cities have seen through the tobacco litigation that you can take a different position here, that you can argue that it's not sort of the negligent use of the product by one person as the problem that held back the smoking suits for a long time. The tobacco industry was able to blame people's diseases, people's cancers on their own smoking. Instead, what's happening now is that the cities are saying, hey, the gun industry is causing this huge amount of excess costs to society. It's causing costs for police. It's causing costs to our hospitals. And that society ought to be able to recover these costs from the gun industry as a whole.
The tobacco industry has fought a long and expensive campaign against the lawsuits. What about the gun industry? Is it as well equipped as the tobacco industry to fight the lawsuits?
This is one of the fascinating points, and where the cities think that the gun industry is much more vulnerable than the tobacco industry because it's much smaller. The combined sales last year of the gun industry were about $1.4 billion. Tobacco last year sold about $48 billion worth of cigarettes. So we're talking about, in tobacco's case, a huge industry, in the gun industry's case, a small industry. And furthermore, the gun industry's sales have been stagnant or even down over the past decade. So it's not a business that's making a great deal of money.
Is the fact that gun sales are either slumping or stagnant a sign that gun violence is perhaps on the decrease?
I'm not sure that that's connected. You might argue that. But gun sales have been slumping for some time because guns have become somewhat un-PC. They're unfashionable. And the gun industry has really been reaching to try to find ways to increase its sales. If you go back a few years, you go back to the 1950s and 60s, rifles and shotguns were the major form of guns that were manufactured, so-called long guns. But since then, it's been handguns that have been the big item, and sales of rifles and shotguns have really been down. And in recent years, the gun industry has survived by increasing the sales of its handguns, and in the 80s, particularly by increasing the lethality of its guns, developing these new kinds of products. One of the oddities about the gun industry is that, of course, guns don't really become obsolescent and they don't wear out, unlike most other products. Guns can go on for years, tens of years, even 100 years, and still be useful. So the gun industry's had to come up with very new kinds of products in order to increase its sales. And in the 80s, they developed these semi-automatic handguns with large magazines, with new calibers, bigger calibers that could cause more damage, and they were kind of sexy to buy and sexy to use.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Fox Butterfield, national correspondent for the New York Times. He writes about crime and criminal justice. We'll take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Fox Butterfield is my guest, national correspondent for the New York Times. He writes about crime and criminal justice. He's also the author of the book All God's Children. And we're talking about the current lawsuits against the gun industry and the possibility of future lawsuits against the industry as well. Is there new information about how guns are bought, who uses guns, and the nature of crime that is feeding these lawsuits?
Yes, there's been a lot of new information developed just in the past few years. I mean, the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, it's called the ATF, had really not been able to, which is the federal agency that oversees guns. It had been very underpowered until quite recently. Ronald Reagan actually ran on a platform to abolish the ATF. It's always been unpopular with the NRA, with gun enthusiasts. And in fact, until very recently, they didn't even have any computers, and they've not been allowed to computerize their information. But President Clinton put some people in who are much more interested in trying to find out where these guns were coming from, where the guns used in crime were coming from. And the ATF has begun a serious program of tracing guns used in crimes. And one of the things that's come out of that research has been the discovery that a very high percentage of guns used in crimes are new guns. The gun industry has always said that guns used in crimes were largely stolen. What the research is showing is that up to a half of the guns used in crimes have, in fact, been manufactured within the past 3 years, that have a relatively short time to crime. In other words, they're going from the manufacturer to the distributor to the dealer to purchasers and getting used in crime very quickly.
And that indicates what about the gun industry?
That indicates that the gun industry probably knows that this is happening and could probably find more responsible, more controlled ways to distribute their products. At least that's what the cities are claiming.
Guns are one of, or perhaps the only product not regulated by the Consumer Product Safety Board. Can you clarify that?
Yes. In fact, guns are essentially the only product that's not subject to regulation by the Consumer Product Safety Commission. That's by an act of Congress going back to the early 1970s when the Consumer Product Safety Commission was created. Representative Dingell, who was a member of the NRA, put that in there.
Now, is this part of the debate now about whether there should be an agency that actually regulates the production of guns, regulates the quality of the guns themselves, what kind of safety devices are on them?
Certainly some of the cities would like to see that. Terry, one of the very interesting findings of recent years, which goes along with this, which leads the cities to bring these suits, is that all of the increase in homicide in the 1980s, that big jump in murder, was caused by juveniles, and all of that was in turn caused by juveniles using handguns, so that entire increase really is attributable to handgun violence. And so the cities that want to get a handle on their violent crime problem have to go after guns. And the cities that have been successful in doing this, Boston is the best example, have really made an extremely serious effort to try to stop the illegal market in guns. And Boston went almost 2 years without a juvenile being killed by a gun as a result.
Fox Butterfield is national correspondent for The New York Times, covering crime and criminal justice. He's the author of the book All God's Children. The gun industry is at work fighting the lawsuits against it and preparing for more. Richard Feldman is the executive director of the gun industry lobby group, the American Shooting Sports Council. Its members are from all levels of the gun industry. I spoke with Feldman about how the gun industry is responding to the attacks against it. The Chicago lawsuit is suing the gun industry for $433 million. And this is going to include police costs, fire department, public hospitals, expenses caused through gun injuries and gun deaths.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of being held financially liable for those costs gun injuries?
Chicago would like to credit our industry $1 million for every time a Chicago police officer has used his gun to prevent a crime from occurring, that might be weighing out the equities and the detriments one way. But to look at the issue, how come every time a Chicago police officer draws his sidearm, prevents criminals from misusing a knife or a gun, apprehends them, we're not being credited for that. We're only responsible for the criminal misuse. When you say that an industry who manufactures a product lawfully, correctly, properly, and a non-defective product at that, and when those products are misused by criminals who shouldn't be in possession of that product, one has to ask what the Chicago Police Department has been doing all these many years to combat the problem. All of a sudden, Mayor Daley has decided there's a problem in Chicago, and instead of saying to his police department, let's figure out a better way, let's get our police resources together and go after the people misusing guns. No, instead Mayor Daley is saying, let's blame the people who manufacture the product, who is sold and transferred many times, but eventually, in a few instances, get in the hands of the wrong people who misuse those products. The industry who makes them is responsible? Oh, please, Mayor Daley. The citizens of Chicago aren't that silly and aren't that foolish, and juries across this country don't believe that kind of nonsense. You may be able to say that in a news conference, but the American people know better than that.
I want to step back and look at the big picture here. There are already a couple of cities that are suing the gun industry, and more cities might do that as well in the near future. What is the gun industry's plan for fighting these lawsuits?
Well, I think there are several possibilities, depending on how many cities, in fact, decide to spend their precious resources on lawyers going into court, spending 4, 5, 6 years, which ultimately will end up as a jury verdict for the defendant, our industry. How many lives actually could have been saved by spending those same resources on increased police protection, on the ATF tracking the very people who are misusing guns, spying and selling them illegally today? And the citizens are going to have to make decisions, as we do in a democracy, whether their mayors have been effective in the fights that the citizens care about. Anyone who thinks that by suing the manufacturers of the very products that law enforcement carries to protect the citizens is going to prevent one single criminal act with a firearm, they're kidding themselves. And they may be able to successfully kid themselves, but I doubt they can kid a majority of the citizens in their cities for very long. We'll fight the suits. We have no choice.
How would you compare the city lawsuits against the gun industry with the lawsuits against the tobacco industry?
Well, once again, they're really not very much alike at all. Tobacco, when tobacco is used as intended by tobacco manufacturers, is harmful to the user. When a handgun is used as intended by a handgun manufacturer, it doesn't harm the user. It can save the user's life. Big distinction between those two products.
Richard Feldman is the executive director of the gun industry lobby group, the American Shooting Sports Council. We'll hear more from him in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're talking about a new direction the gun debate has taken. Two cities, Chicago and New Orleans, are suing the gun industry, holding it liable for the legal and medical costs associated with shootings. More cities are considering similar suits. We're going to continue our conversation with Richard Feldman, executive director of the gun lobby group, the American Shooting Sports Council. What are the legal grounds that the gun industry is going to use to fight the suits?
America's law in the whole area that we're being sued on is very well established in all 50 states. Manufacturers cannot be held liable for the criminal misuse of their products. That is very old established law, and there seems to be no intent on the part of anyone other than the plaintiff's lawyers to change that long established principle. To do otherwise would take our whole civil justice system, turn it upside down and inside out.
So you think that the gun industry should have absolutely no responsibility for what happens to the guns after they're manufactured?
I didn't say that. I think we have an absolute responsibility to abide by the letter of the law. But once a product leaves the hands of a manufacturer, the manufacturer essentially has no control over the product 3 and 4 and 7 and 10 steps removed. And that's true for all products. You know, the only reason that scalpels are manufactured is to cut human flesh. That is, after all, the intent of a scalpel manufacturer in manufacturing that particular device. Now, generally, those scalpels end up in the hands of surgeons, and we all applaud when a surgeon uses that tool correctly, properly, to save someone's life. Yet that same tool, the scalpel, in the hands of a crazed maniac can cause all sorts of amounts of damage. To sue the scalpel manufacturer because he or she knows that some small percentage of the scalpels they manufacture may end up in the hands of a criminal is to say, don't manufacture scalpels at all.
The suits being filed against the gun industry, at the very least, are going to cost the gun industry a lot of money in legal fees. Are you prepared to deal with that? What impact do you think just the legal fees alone are going to have on the gun industry?
Well, I can tell you that in just this Hamilton case in Brooklyn, we've spent already, and the trial isn't over, upwards of close to perhaps $4 million. Naturally, just like in any other product, ultimately the consumer will pay. Will the price of guns go up? You bet they will.
Do you think that guns on the street have changed from the guns of 20 or 30 years ago, that they're more lethal now? And if so, what does that mean?
I think the people on the streets of America are more lethal. The guns, well, I mean, I guess reasonable people could argue it's very interesting, the same people who keep talking about the need to ban so-called Saturday night specials. Well, by whatever definition, one thing we all agree on, the so-called Saturday night specials tend to be inexpensive, low caliber, meaning less lethal guns. When those guns start to disappear and are restricted in one way or another, criminals don't say, gee, I was only going to commit my crimes with these Saturday night specials in 25 caliber. If the guns that are predominantly around are 9mm, 40 caliber, 45, criminals will use whatever gun they get their hands on. In fact, that's ATF's informal definition of the gun of choice of America's criminals, the first gun they can get their hands on. Will the lethality of those guns go up? Yeah, probably will. There are consequences to policy decisions that we make. Sometimes there are unintended consequences, and our elected officials ought to be a heck of a lot more careful in their policy deliberations than they've been, because the consequences can be life and death.
The National Conference of Mayors is meeting at the end of the month. One of the big subjects on the agenda will be, should other cities file suits against the gun industry? A lot of cities are considering it. They're not sure if they're going to go through with it. What are you doing to try to convince mayors not to sue the gun industry?
Well, we've been meeting for the last year with Mayor Ed Rendell of Philadelphia and his task force, and we've come a fairly long way. The question is, do the mayors want to take kind of an in-your-face, litigious approach to problem-solving, or do they want to work with us? The choice is still theirs. I think we can solve a lot more in this country when we come together and stop the continual slogans-over-solutions approach that some of the mayors have and work on the problem and find solutions.
Any example of a compromise you're willing to make as a member of the gun industry?
For example, it was President Clinton who came to us a year ago, September, and asked us to move forward with the child safety locks. It wasn't but 2 weeks we were able to come back with an answer, and we were there in the Rose Garden with the president leading the applause for what we did. We're capable, able to do those kinds of things when appropriate, but we're going to do them when we're working together. If the mayors want to sue us in court, well, they're certainly free to do so, but they're going to be spending an awful lot of resources getting nowhere quickly.
Richard Feldman is the executive director of the American Shooting Sports Council. This is Fresh Air.